Welcome to the MJA podcast. I'm chatting this morning with Rob Ellis, who's a PhD candidate at the Centre for Kidney Disease Research at the University of Queensland. Good morning, Rob.
Morning, Kate.
Thank you for your time. You've co-authored a narrative review on optimising the assessment of kidney function in regard to localised renal masses. Are all renal masses malignant?
No. Only a very small proportion of masses are malignant. So most of the time you see a mass in the kidney, it's going to be a simple cyst or something which is benign in nature.
But you have to treat them as malignant to start with, I'm guessing.
Only if you can't automatically denote them as benign. So, for example, if you look at a cyst on imaging, on a CT scan, for example, it's not going to enhance when you do a contrast study, for example. So you're going to be able to tell that that's benign. Similarly, for masses such as an angiomyolipoma, you'll be able to tell that it's benign based on that enhancement pattern. Whereas for a malignant lesion, there will be significant enhancement for most lesions. There are other factors, but for about 85% of masses that do enhance, you will get a diagnosis of a malignant lesion.
Imaging is the first step?
Yes.
What's the second step?
So after that, you really don't have many options. So you can try and exclude a benign lesion by doing other imaging studies. So you might start with ultrasound, which identifies a mass, then you go through and do a CT or an MRI. And basically after that, you decide whether intervention is appropriate. And so for masses that you can say are definitely benign, you will just leave it, you'll watch and see if anything changes. But for the most part, that mass will not be considered malignant, whereas you might see something which you're not sure about. And for that mass, you will consider it malignant unless you can say with any certainty that it is benign. So for the most part, that intervention will consist of surgical resection. But in cases of maybe an elderly patient with a small mass or a heavily comorbid patient, you might consider active surveillance, which is just watching that lesion, seeing if it progresses either clinically or increases in size. And after that, you might consider resection. But for the most part, surgical resection is the gold standard.
Is kidney cancer particularly aggressive?
It can be. Some subtypes of kidney cancer, the most common of which is clear cell renal cell carcinoma, can be quite aggressive. Some other uncommon types can be even more so. There are translocation carcinomas. The XP11 is quite aggressive, and other types, unclassified types, can be quite aggressive. Other types, such as chromophobe RCC, for example, can be quite indolent, and there are even cases where malignancy has been downgraded in guidelines. For example, what used to be known as the multilocular cystic RCC was changed to a multilocular cystic renal neoplasm of low malignant potential just recently in the latest blue book that's come out, and that's because there is no evidence that it will, or very minimal evidence that it has a malignant potential. So it's, you know, quite a wide spectrum of disease.
So let's talk about surgical resection. Is it always radical? How often can it be partial? What's the split there?
First of all, when you look at the lesion, you decide whether a radical or a partial nephrectomy is appropriate. You want to look at the progressiveness of that disease. So, for example, if you've got a disease for a lesion that's quite large or invading into the renal vein or the IVC, then radical nephrectomy is probably the way to go. Whereas if you've got a small tumour which isn't close to any major structures of the kidney, or even a large tumour that is quite exophytic, which means that it's growing outwards from the kidney and not invading that internal structure, then partial nephrectomy can be considered in these cases. Other things like the complexity of the lesion, multifocality, will be taken into consideration, as well as the health of that the contralateral kidney, and that will all be determined based on imaging.
The main purpose of your narrative review, I think, was to identify places where we can improve management of masses with a view to avoiding, presumably, CKD, chronic kidney disease.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Where did you identify that the improvements needed to be made?
Well, looking at how kidney function is assessed in these patients, most of the time imaging studies are done, of course, which look at the contralateral kidney and determine whether there are any structural problems. And then EGFR, or estimated glomerular filtration rate, is evaluated, which is based on serum creatinine. That is basically the extent to which kidney function is measured.
Right.
However, looking at how kidney function is looked at in the general population, one thing that is very routinely done that you don't see in these patients is the albumin-creatinine ratio.
Okay.
And this is looking at albumin in the urine, which is pretty much always abnormal occurrence. And so patients with albuminuria have an increased likelihood of progression of chronic kidney disease. And this is due to glomerular damage and is an indicator of damage to the kidneys.
What improvement do you think can be made in that assessment of albuminuria, for example? What do we need to look out for as post-surgery?
Well, I think that the improvement can start at preoperatively. So you can, for example, instead of just looking at that EGFR, you would also do a urine albumin creatinine ratio at first void if possible.
But,
you know, a spot test is also fine. And if you assess that in conjunction with the EGFR, you can determine the risk that patient has of developing chronic kidney disease or progression of chronic kidney disease before surgery. So that's just a value before surgery. And so, for example, take two patients with a normal kidney function, an EGFR greater than 90. If one of these patients had an albumin-creatinine ratio less than 3, then they would have minimal to no risk of CKD progression, whereas in a patient with an ACR greater than 30 milligrams per millimole, these patients would have almost the same risk as a patient with an EGFR less than 30 progressing to end-stage kidney disease. So that's quite a significant difference in these two patients, and they should be managed accordingly.
Post-operatively?
Post-operatively, you want to manage the patient as you would any other patient after surgery, so watch for any changes to blood pressure, any indications of a complication, bleeding, that sort of thing, which can all contribute to kidney function. These are just general principles. It's not specific to managing or optimizing kidney function. And then afterwards, you want to really keep an eye on these patients. So this is where guidelines for this particular intervention, there is a deficit because patients aren't really managed in terms of kidney function. They're managed in terms of that risk of that oncological, urological risk as opposed
right.
to a risk of kidney disease.
So what can be changed there? What can be improved?
So some of the things that can be done are regular screening of kidney damage. So this can come in the form of both looking at the EGFR and the albumin-creatinine ratio. And if you see major changes or problems in regards to those, then appropriate management can follow. So, for example, referral to a nephrologist if that's indicated, or continual follow-up with that particular problem. Also, things like reducing blood pressure, maintaining glycemic control are important in any patient, but especially in these patients with a risk of chronic kidney disease. Keeping weight down, smoking cessation, basically everything that you would advise for a normal screening checkup or GP checkup would be applicable here, with the goal in mind of reducing that risk of chronic kidney disease.
Do GPs routinely screen for CKD?
In certain patients, GPs should look at screening for CKD. So in patients who, for example, have diabetes or hypertension, any patients that have got a family history of kidney disease, any established cardiovascular disease, for example, kidney function should also be looked at in these patients, particularly in patients who are obese or have hypertension or diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
These are factors that increase the risk of chronic kidney disease quite significantly. And this screening can take the form of looking at EGFR and ACR predominantly. There isn't any evidence for these screening practices in this population. For the general population, these are what are indicated.
Basically, you're advocating that screening be increased for this particular population, that we're not doing enough of it.
Absolutely. So in the general population, these screenings are advised for the patients who I've mentioned are at increased risk. But mm-hmm. for the nephrectomy population, there isn't any actual designated screening procedures. So based on the current evidence in this population, there isn't really much to go on. So we've looked to the guidelines for the general population, and this is quite applicable for the patients with kidney cancer, particularly because a lot of the risk factors for chronic kidney disease are also a risk factor for renal cell carcinoma. You would expect that a lot of that population is going to have an increased risk for chronic kidney disease. And when you compound that with removal of part or all of a kidney, that risk just increases. So I think it is important that this be touched on. Mm. And any risk of chronic kidney disease is addressed early.
Thank you for your time, Rob.
All right, no problem. Thank you.